Welcome to the Self-Made Mind Podcast. We'll be bringing you real-life, honest conversations with some of the world's elite performers, from sporting athletes to millionaire CEOs and everyone in between. Success leaves clues. And it's now our mission to deliver these stories so you can start writing your own self-made script.
Hello there, fellow go-getters. Hope everyone's doing fantastic. Listen, I just want to be upfront and honest with you. I'm keeping it real as they come this time. Currently walking down the beach in lovely Bridlington, East Yorkshire. We've come away for a quiet weekend, but we still need to get these episodes out. So here I am in my rawest form, currently not well. Walking on the beach, I've got a couple of dogs running up to me now. Oh my god. But yeah, listen guys, we've got a fantastic episode to release for you this week. I was lucky enough to speak to Paul Brown. Now, he's the founder and CEO of Ball Foods. B-O-L Foods. Some of you will have probably seen his products in the likes of Sainsbury's. He's stocked up in Sainsbury's nationwide. Plant-based, convenient foods. He does power shakes. Fantastic company. Paul's founded there. Lucky enough to speak to him and get his story. He comes from a sporting background. He was a professional snowboarder in California before receiving quite a bad injury. Which forced him to stop and go into the business side of things. And he said his second passion after sport was food. Ended up working for Innocent Smoothies, as you all may know, for 14 years. He was a key member in that Innocent Smoothies team, helping them build to where they are today before starting his own company. So listen, guys, I think it's a very valuable chat, this one, and anyone interested in, you know, especially the business side of things for this chat, as well as sport, really, highly recommend giving this one a listen. So yeah, it's series 3, episode 2, Paul Brown.
Okay, big welcome to the podcast, Paul Brown. How are you doing, pal?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm excited to hear some northern accents surrounded by Londoners down here. Yeah.
Well, you've come to the right place. We're certainly northern, myself and Craig. Yeah, first of all, mate, thanks for, you know, giving us your time, and it's a pleasure having you on. So how have you been throughout this tough time recently, first of all, shall we ask?
I mean, I think from a professional perspective, it's been tough, but there's a lot of other people that have run businesses and their whole life's work's been completely destroyed by this pandemic. And I feel massively for those people. We as a brand and as a business have not benefited, far from it. We've got a big proportion of our business is selling products for people on the move, busy people, working, office workers, jumping on trains. So that part of our business has come to a grinding halt, and it's forced us to be creative and pivot and do direct to consumer and all that stuff. But overall, from a revenue perspective, it's definitely hurt us. But we're going to come back from this, and I think we'll be okay. And then from a personal perspective, probably just like a lot of people miss that social interaction that we took for granted. I love spending time with friends, family. I love cuddling my mates, and do you know what I mean? Those very basic needs.
Exactly. I'm a cuddler as well, Paul. Yeah. It's tough.
Not see my grandparents that live up in Preston, and was going to go come back north and see everybody over Christmas, and obviously living down here in London at the last minute. Boris said we couldn't do that. So, but overall, I think it's forced me just to pause and reflect, like it has for everyone. And there's been a lot of upside to this. I've probably spent more time with my young kids than I ever have. And irrespective of what we do coming out of this, I'm going to make sure I probably put more time aside to be less rushing about and concentrate on the things that are most important in life. So I'm definitely trying to take the positives from a tough time for everyone.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's great. That's great to hear. Like I say, it's tough for everyone. So I guess, you know, myself and Craig are business owners as well. And we just kind of feel lucky that we're able to stay operating to some degree. It's, you know, we've all taken hits, haven't we? But like I say, it's important to figure out what's important in these times. And I think you've definitely done that, Paul, yeah? So obviously we're interested in the journey of yourself, mate. So if we can start from the beginning, Paul, from the childhood and just bring us up to the present day, mate, if you can.
Okay, well, yeah, born in Withinshaw, parents, one from Preston, one from Glasgow, lucky enough to be sent to decent schools. And think about my school life, and it was just playing sport, and it was just, yeah. I was convinced I was going to be a footballer. Not as good as you, obviously.
We're still chasing that dream now, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. most of family are Man City fans. I'm a Man United fan. So I've obviously been on the wrong end of a lot of stick the last few years. We might be turning things a little bit around with Bruno, but let's see. Grew up in the 90s, watching the class of 92 just smash it. Always been into lots of other sports as well. Played a lot of rugby in my time, snowboarding. I thought I got to my university age and went to university to study sports science, and was trying to play half decent standard of rugby whilst I was there, and realised actually wasn't going to be good enough to make the grade, and ran off to California to be a pro snowboarder, and that was going well until I had a really bad injury. I shattered every bone in my wrist, dislocated my elbow, and it forced me to rethink my life. And second passion to sport has always been food, and tried to start my own food business. It was a healthy Mexican Californian style business. Came back to Manchester, tried to raise the money, didn't raise the money, which is a blessing in disguise looking back 20 years later, because I'm still trying to work out how to run a business, and I've had 20 years experience, so thank goodness no one gave me the money back then. I definitely would have blown it. Couldn't get off the ground, joined a little fledgling drinks brand called Innocent Drinks, and stayed there for 14 years, and was part of an incredible team of people that took that brand from being relative anonymity in London to being a bit of a global phenomenon. And then more recently in 2015, started Bol and went 100% plant-based a few years back. And yeah, I just feel like I'm at the very much at the start of this entrepreneurial journey with Bol. We're all about inspiring the world to eat more plants, trying to become a plant-based brand that's loved by meat eaters, have global ambitions. Yeah. And like you said at the beginning, CV19 has given us a bit of a slapping, but we're still in it, still fighting, and pretty excited to come out of this round of lockdown in June and hopefully get to a better normal. So that's my couple of minute plotted history to how I've got to this place on planet Earth.
That's brilliant. I didn't really know the sporting background to you as well, Paul. That's interesting. So you know, you mentioned that you had like a really bad injury when you were snowboarding and kind of that was your, I'm guessing that was your main focus and that's what you had, your goals planned for the, you know, the snowboarding industry. So how did you kind of, you know, change direction and what sort of mindset did you take on after you'd had the injury and you knew that it were coming to a halt? What would you say?
It's a great question. I've never been asked that question before. I think the first thing that springs to mind is perspective. I got perspective very quickly because I was 21 years old. I just turned 21 and I was racing board across when I had the injury. And I was lying there in hospital feeling pretty sorry for myself with a cast on up to my arm and told arms in bits and might never recover. And that it wasn't great at the time. But I got a note from back home and a very close friend of mine, a guy called Andy Blythe, was an England under 21 rugby player, was playing professional rugby for Sale Sharks. On the same day I'd injured myself in California, he was playing against Saracens and he broke his back. Yeah. And he was told he was never going to walk again. And his injury happened on my birthday. So we don't catch up as much anymore because of how life is, both dads. But we always speak on my birthday because it's the anniversary. And I just think very quickly, not that you would ever wish for perspective to dawn on you in that way, I realized, I'd shattered my wrist, I'd dislocated my elbow, my dreams of being a snowboarder were pretty, like quite literally shattered. But in the big scheme of things, a great mate of mine was in a much, much more challenging position. So very quickly got my head into trying to find the positives. I could still walk. I still had my wits about me. I had travel insurance that was going to pay for everything. So as a 21-year-old guy able to live in Los Angeles for the best part of a year, recuperating and a sliding doors moment to explore my next passion, which was food, I was very grateful for. So I think failure was something I was pretty used to. Like I joked about it, but I was pretty convinced up until I was about 16. At 16, I was trialing for Manchester City, playing for a half decent standard, and again, that didn't quite happen. And then, like I said, I did the rugby thing, and that didn't quite happen. So the fact that snowboarding happened and then didn't quite happen, I've always had quite high levels of grit, resilience, determination, those traditional values that were drummed into me as a kid. So just trying to see it as a learning experience, and like self-pity is something it's never really been in me. I just don't think it's helpful in any way, shape or form, but just a level of realism, balancing optimism and realism. When your dreams are shattered, I think is something that you need to get pretty comfortable doing. And so from a mindset perspective, it was about looking forward and only looking back when you're looking back in a helpful, constructive way to take the learnings to help you propel you forward. And then that's a question I've never been asked, and I don't know whether there's any insight in that, but that's kind of taking me back 20 years to, I think, what was going on in my head at the time.
Yeah. Ah, great answer. Yeah. It just makes me spring to mind. There's that Denzel Washington sort of speech where he talks about failing forward. And that's exactly what you're saying there, Paul. So you and Denzel have got something in common now.
and they're in the commonality stops. he is an absolute legend of a man.
Oh yeah, you could listen to him all day, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Interesting to, you know, to find out where do you think that sort of resilience was built into you then? Could you kind of put that down to a maybe a role model in your life, or, you know, events that have happened to you in the past, or just got to come from somewhere, hasn't it?
Yeah, I my count my blessings. I'm very lucky to have been brought up by incredible parents, loving family, always felt very, very secure that they would be there for myself and my brothers. And you don't realize that when you're growing up, how important that is. I do now realize it now I'm a father. But they taught me at a very early age, work hard, play hard. My dad, every time we getting school reports was a massive moment. Every single term, my old man would sit me down, and it was very clear. It was like, so long as these teachers are saying you're trying hard, I don't really care about the rest. And so it was, I never found it that easy at school. I wasn't the brightest by any stretch of the imagination. I definitely felt I did all right on sports day and things like that, but those kind of skills weren't as respected as much. It was kind of like you needed to be good at maths, English, science, French, all the stuff that I wasn't that good at. It was always a bit of a pressure at school to be, found that side of things a bit tough. But so long as I was working hard and trying, that was really all my parents were mainly bothered about. And manners maketh man, and all of those things now, which I look back and it just set me up to know that I had the confidence to do whatever I wanted to do. I never really followed the rules as strictly. I didn't have parents that put pressure on me that I had to become a doctor or I had to go to university. I was the first person in my family to go to university. I only lasted 9 months, but I didn't get made to feel bad for only lasting 9 months. And they didn't lord me up because I'd gone to university. It was just we were always encouraged just to follow our dreams. And so long as you're putting a shift in, and the fact that you zig and zag, I think so many youngsters, it's like, I don't think you appreciate that to get from A to B, it never is a straight line, and you do, you zig, you zag, you move. And for me, just was always given the encouragement to follow my dreams. And if those dreams change, one minute you want to be a footballer, the next minute you want to be an actor, the next minute you want to do scuba diving, whatever it is, if you follow your passion and your dreams, I think that getting drummed into you at an early age is gold dust.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Completely agree. Oh.
Sorry, my lights just went off there.
Oh, you're all right.
I've not gone. I've just put the lights back on.
You're right, mate, no problem. So I think that's so important. And I'm guessing that's kind of the sort of freedom you've given to your own children now. Would I be right in saying that, Paul? Is that how you've kind of brought your kids up there? You know, dream big. There's quite a good quote that talking about when you've got your kids, it's like, give them roots and give them wings. So it's like, you know, wings to go off and go for the big dreams, but you've also got the roots there if you ever need as well.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Isla was 7 on Christmas Day and my son Jackson's 5. So I'm still in the early years of working out how to be a parent, but 100% I'm take as much as I can from how I was brought up and put that into today's challenge of being a parent. I think it's the greatest gift any individual can have to become a parent. If I had one request from myself over the next 10, 20, 30, 40, however long I'm lucky enough to be on this planet, it's to be the best possible dad I can be. And for me, that is definitely not about putting undue pressure on my pups, as I call them, to be be what makes like me happy. It's about what makes them happy in every single part of their life. And I'm there just to support them. And obviously how you support them changes over as they grow up. But it's a different world now, isn't it? We all know Isla's probably going to be asking me for a phone in the next couple of years. I remember I got my first phone at 20, and everyone in my family was calling me Flash Harry, because it was like, oh, look at him, big time Charlie, he's got himself a mobile. And it's like
size of an house brick.
Yeah, it's massive. And now it's like I'm gonna have to get my daughter a phone, and we all know the trials and tribulations of social media and the access that gives. So I'm just about learning, reading, not pretending that I've got it down of how to be the best parent, but I'm never going to stop trying, because that is just the most important thing to me.
Yeah. Sure you can relate there, Craig.
I've got a 9-year-old and a 6-year-old. So my son's just gone 9, and he's Fortnite and games and. I think he's a teenager already. It's ridiculous. Yeah, don't want to get out of bed at the moment. So brilliant. Kids, you love them so much, but yeah, they test you. I tell you now, they test you.
yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? The gaming, it's incredible, isn't it? I reckon gamers in 10 years will be bigger than Beckham ever was. Do you know what I mean? It's celebrities in their own right. And I've never been a big gamer. I don't appreciate it, but it's a whole world again. Another thing, if one of my kids gets into gaming, I wouldn't know where to start in terms of supporting them. They're just getting lost in it for days, can they?
Yeah, it's madness. The amount of money flying about now in that sort of industry, like 9-year-olds making like 20 million in a year and stuff like this. It's just wow, right? Okay, for playing a video game. If I'd have known that as a child, I'd have been, I'd have been making that kind of money. Moving on to Innocence movies, because I like, do they come in some sort of pack now? Do they come in a pack, or are they sponsored by somebody, like Subway or something like that? I can't remember. Like, my kids drink them sometimes, and I'm like, oh, Innocence movies, I know them. Yeah. How did that come about then? Was it just a job, or was it like...
Yeah, so I think maybe what you're referring to is it's now owned by Coca-Cola.
Right, okay.
The brand sold to Coca-Cola, so is obviously part of a massive business now, but it's still a standalone business. In terms of how it came about to me, so it was back in 2000, I was working in a cafe in Manchester, I was a grill chef, learning how to kind of run a kitchen cafe, helping obviously build the foundations for the business I was trying to start at the time. And as I said, that didn't quite come off as I was hoping. So was looking for employment elsewhere for a few years whilst give me time to set up my own thing. And Innocent had just launched. So I came to London, tried one of the products. And then on the back of the bottle, it said, it had the address, Fruit Towers, call the banana phone, come visit us if you want. At the time, it was a very unique way of communicating to people that were buying the products. And so I just got the address and turned up and met the founders. Because I'd spent time in California, I obviously saw that smoothies were massively popular out there and were growing. There was magic in that bottle. And so, yeah, they had quite funny vehicles at the time. So they did like yogurt-based drinks and smoothies. And my first vehicle was a grassy van. So it was like a little Renault Kangoo with a massive, like half of it was a fridge, and then it was covered in like fake grass and fruit. It looked like something like Dumb and Dumber. But
I was just thinking of that, yeah.
Yes, exactly. So they were like, right, if you think you can sell them, well, let's fill up a van and drive up north. And so I was driving around everywhere north Birmingham and above for the first 5 years, selling smoothies out the back of the van to sandwich shops, delis, a few bigger shops then got to. And one thing led to another, and before I knew it, I'd been there 14 years. So that was the very short summary of my segue into the world of smoothies.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So just curious to, so, because obviously you'd had this entrepreneurial sort of science to you before you got involved with Innocent. So I'm just kind of, I'm curious how you lasted 14 years in Innocent when you'd already had that kind of, you know, entrepreneurial spark in you before. Where, you know, the journey through Innocent, I'm just curious at the reason why you lasted so long there.
Yeah, no, again, another great question. It's because we were all made to feel like entrepreneurs. So right. we the three founders very much saw their role as almost helping to facilitate future entrepreneurs. So the way we did business was very different to how lots of other businesses did business. And I guess most of your listeners will have heard of Innocent, will have, know a lot about the story, how the guys started. So every single year, I just felt pretty much this very similar to the same freedom I have now running my own business, but I felt that innocent. So as I say, my first job was essentially responsible for Innocent from Birmingham and above. So whether I was driving around Edinburgh, Glasgow, Birmingham, Liverpool, Leeds, Manchester, and I was empowered to do what I wanted when I wanted, so long as I sold enough smoothies to justify them employing me. So for me, it was like I was running my own business, and I learned so much at Innocent about having a big vision, building a business that had a definitive purpose, beliefs, values, the importance of recruiting the right team, setting people up for success. So much that I had no clue about. I actually apply a lot of what I'd learned playing sport into the world of business, but then it just helped refine it and give it a little bit more of a business edge. And then my passion was always to say food. And so I was trying to convince the guys to launch into the food side of things for a few years. And then in 2008, we launched Innocent Veg Pots. And that was the first food part of the brand. And I was fully responsible for the launch of that and then the management of that. So I guess I had 7 years on the drink side and went from tiny business to a massive business. I mean, by the time 2008 came, we were doing over 100 million quid of smoothies. And I was from a sales commercial side was responsible for a half decent chunk of that. And then in 2008 there was zero business of food, and a few years later we were doing over 10 million, and I was part of the leading the team to do that. So it was almost, I didn't go to business school, but I did go to business school. I had 14 years at one of the best food and drink business schools anyone could have ever dreamt of. But it's a great question, because I don't think I would have lasted more than a few months at a normal business where somebody said to me, this is what you're responsible for, and it's a tiny little box and you never come out your box, and if you're not encouraged to challenge the status quo, and this is how we do things. And it was quite a hippie-ish type culture. So there was no shirt, no tie. People were turned up in sandals, t-shirt. Someone turned up in a bloody dressing gown one day, which was a bit extreme. But so
sounds like my kind of work. I love that.
Exactly. It was very much, it was like working with your mates, but they were really smart mates. And everyone was united behind the vision to create a really successful, responsible smoothie and juice business. And kind of everything we touched turned to gold at that business. It was a hell of a journey of growth. So that's probably why I stuck around for so long, because it was just it didn't feel like it was really an employment. I was part of building something.
Yeah, I think there's a really interesting kind of lesson to take from that is, you know, if you own a business and you want people to buy into your vision and empower people, that's what I think, that talking about leadership, I mean, would you say that that's helped you create the business you have now, which is obviously Ball Foods. Let's talk about your business and the journey there as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, people get confused about what leadership is, especially in business. Leadership is not a position; it's a choice. It's a mindset. I believe, as you just alluded to there, that by giving people responsibility and empowering people to take responsibility, I think as a species, we are much better when we're encouraging people to be the best version of themselves and putting people on the edge. Like I say it to the team here, it does feel like a bit of a furnace at Bowl sometimes because we're trying to do so much so quick. We're trying to improve our standards in every single thing that we do all of the time. And it means there's pressure. And I've always seen pressure as a gift. I can't think of a time when I've not felt under the pressure, to be honest. I love that. The worst thing in the world for me would be to feel bored. I just hardly ever feel bored. And I don't think anyone at the team ever feels bored because we're constantly trying to push the boundaries. So in terms of our journey, as I say, we started in 2015. First ever product we sold was to Sainsbury's on the 30th of April, 2015. In 2016, we won New Business of the Year at the National Business Awards. So a big fancy black tie dinner with ex-Prime Minister William Hague dishing out trophies, and I was there on my own because my finance director didn't think we'd win and didn't also want to sign off the few hundred pound extra ticket beyond me. When we'd won, he actually gate crashed later on in the night, but so we had a good one. But that was in 2016. Half of our business was it was all about making it easy for busy people to eat well. So veg pots, salad jars. Half of our business was 100% plant-based and half of it had recipes with meat, fish and dairy in. And I obviously saw what is now common knowledge, the impact of the Western food diet on our health and the environment around us, and decided to make, at the time, the pretty maverick decision to cut the business in half and drop all those recipes with meat, fish and dairy and go 100% plant-based. So we did that across 2017. Since then, we've created loads more products. We've grown the size of the team. We're still in the early days, but up until COVID, it felt like we were going northwards again. This has slowed us down a little bit, but already can see with the innovation that the team have done over COVID and the agreements that we're agreeing with customers at the moment, that there's big growth ahead again. I mean, I think most of the growth in the plant-based areas over the next few years is going to come from meat eaters. And I meant to say that. It's not going to come from vegans. I've got the ultimate respect for the vegans that for years have like done the heavy lifting. Still less than a couple of percent in the country are fully vegan. But most people I know are now recognizing that the impact of our food choices has on the environment, the single biggest thing any individual human can do to help reverse the impact of climate change is to adopt more principles of a plant-based diet. And for me, it's not about trying to turn everyone vegan. It's just about trying to put the respect back into the food system. It just feels like for years, particularly in the West, we're like Pac-Man. We've just been going around consume, 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 consume. It's all been about convenience. Oh, how amazing is that? I don't even need to get off my ass. I can just get it delivered to me and eat processed crap. And then it's like, well, that's why obesity is now overtaking cancer. Overtaking smoking is the number one cause of cancer. We've got a massive, there's so many societal problems caused by us eating crap. And actually eating more plant-based food is a real quick, easy way to help address some of the problems that we've got. So I pinch myself every single day because I come into work, which doesn't feel like work, feeling so excited to try to make it easier for people to eat more plants and do that in a way that's all about inclusiveness and not making people feel guilty for any of their food choices. I'm not about making anyone feel guilty for anything they do. We're just about showing that the power of plants is pretty impressive. And I was brought up, if my mum had ever made a dinner with no meat, fish or dairy in it, myself and my brothers would have just probably not even eaten it. And I don't think I knew a vegetarian at school. But I'm bringing my kids up really differently. And it just feels food is the new rock and roll. Everyone's got like building up their love and respect for the food system, and whether it's restaurants or people on Instagram, their food is hashtagged more than anything else. It's like a bit of a badge of honor, isn't it? People going and discovering new cool food markets, and I just think it's amazing. And hopefully we can harness some of that interest that everybody seems to have in food now to go, okay, right, how can we eat in a way that doesn't screw up the planet so much and allows us to live a slightly healthier life?
Yeah.
And I'm part of that, which is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. It certainly sounds like you're giving it a really good shot as well. One thing that's, you know, obvious, I think, to me and probably to you, Craig, that your passion about the mission that you're on and your business is very obvious. So would you say that, say if someone's looking to start a new venture, do they need to have all the values and the morals lined up with what they're going into, would you say?
I think I'll flip that on its head slightly and say that for me it's more about passion.
Yeah.
I've never interviewed anyone who doesn't say they're passionate. Everyone says they're passionate. But as an entrepreneur, as somebody that's starting a business, the amount of challenges that get thrown at you on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly basis, in my experience anyway, are off the charts. And I thought I was going into it eyes wide open. The only way you can get through those tough times as an entrepreneur is to genuinely care about the mission. Because if all you care about is being successful or making money, or you're doing it to please other people, or what, like, do you know what I mean? Then
you're just
going to get knocked off you're definitely going to get knocked off the direction that you're going. And I don't know if you can get back on the horse if you don't really care about it. It's just too tough in my experience. Now, there might be loads of other entrepreneurs that have had a much easier run at things, and maybe they're not as passionate about it. But for me personally, I've never been able to really put my mind to, like, truly get good at anything unless I'm truly passionate about it. And I think it's exactly the same in business. Now, as part of that, having big goals that aim for the moon, land amongst the stars, and having a really clear vision, the beliefs and the values that you talk about, I think all of that can kind of, you can iterate that stuff. It can evolve over time. I don't think that's the be all and end all, but without that grit and determination and true love for what it is that you're doing, I struggle. You know, so much about life is about identity and having the beliefs, the values, the routines, turning them into habits, really focusing on getting those fundamentals right. As an entrepreneur, you've got to get that stuff right. Otherwise, you'll run out of bread and the business will go kaput. I mean, what is it? 9 out of 10 new businesses don't last past the first year or two. And it's that nuance of, I'm all about kind of test and learn and seeing failure as a learning experience, but make no doubt about it, as an entrepreneur, failure sucks. Like, most of us are not lucky enough to have a load of cash that I think, don't worry, if you run out, if it doesn't work, then you'll just dip into your bank account, and or you got other people that'll just continue to give you more money. I think you only get a few shots at starting your own business, and if you keep failing, then you're probably going to struggle to convince everyone else to keep funding it. So definitely learn from mistakes, but where possible, try to make sure when you're pressing go that it stacks up from a monetary perspective. Otherwise, it might be a short-lived venture.
Yeah. Hope that, nice. Greg.
No, I mean, I back you up on what you're saying about the whole vegan side of things. I run a cafe myself, so and we're like a veggie vegan type place. So it's, you know, it's something I'm passionate about. Like,
we need to get some ball in there, don't we?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm a chef, so I just cook it all from scratch every day. So I'm just like, yeah, sound and you know, like I'm passionate about. Like, I'm a chef, but I'm passionate about coffee. That's what I've done for 13 years now. So that's something that I've been brewing up for the last 12 years. And then last January, I took the plunge to open my own place, and it's been one hell of a year.
where's that? Where's the cafe?
It's in the centre of Halifax.
Awesome. And do you find most of the people that come in are vegan and veggie, or are they meat eaters that are looking for a bit of a change?
No,
use me as an example if you want, Bill.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. We get a lot of people come in and they're like, why do you do vegan sausages? Why don't you just do normal sausages? And it's like, well, does it taste any different? No. Right. Well, there you go. Like, what's, you know what I mean? Like, we just... Like the whole cakes, everything's, all the cakes are vegan, and nobody can tell the difference. So it's just like, well, you know, you're coming in for avocado on toast. That's what we do. We do like brunch avocado on toast, and everyone's like, this is amazing. It's like, you'd normally just order that if it was in a meat place anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, so yeah, it's difficult. People do come in and go, can I just get a bacon, spam, and egg. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not that kind of place. Sorry, pal. You know what I mean? But you know, slowly changing people. Slowly, I think.
Yeah.
But
good on you, mate. Just, awesome.
It's just getting people to see that it tastes exactly the same, but it's don't have any meat in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I just a quick one there, Paul. I go in regularly to eat at Billy's place, and I'm a meat eater, but I think I can slowly see myself with each like decision I make to eat now. I'm thinking, do I need to eat meat here? Am I just doing it for the sake of it? So I can sense the change in my own mind that's taking place right now. Like I say, I've got a bowl foods meal in the fridge that I'm gonna happily eat after this chat. Yeah. And you know, I think it's just making the conscious decisions, like at every opportunity. I think, you know, if everyone can start doing that, then I think we're on for a better future.
Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's the humans, we're innately selfish. And if we've been brought up, like most of us have, eating loads of meat, fish, and dairy, it's totally normal and understandable that most people are like, well, why would I change? But I like it. It tastes good. Mm. But exactly like your sausage roll example, if, however, there is another option out there which can give the same thing someone likes with a normal, let's say, meat sausage roll that have been brought up on, and then you can make them your own homemade one, and it's plant-based. The more that people realize that it is a no compromise and actually there's benefits to it, that's when I think we're going to get a real big shift. Because if people are constantly thinking, oh, if I have to eat vegan and vegetarian, then it's going to taste like shite, or I'm not going to get my protein, or do you know what I mean? They think it's sacrifice. It's just not going to go mainstream. Whereas even in the last few years, there's just so many, most of the mainstream restaurants now, like there's a load of dirty veganism, isn't there? Where you're getting all the big players bringing out vegan food. And I'm not about judging that. We're all about doing things naturally, made by Mother Nature. There's nothing processed. There's like nothing artificial whatsoever. But the fact is, if McDonald's or KFC or whatever start doing vegan options, certain people in the vegan community that think that's really bad, but I think it's amazing. I think if you can get loads of people going, I don't need to have a Big Mac, I'd rather have the big vegan Mac or whatever, then banging. And that, and then they might go to your cafe, Billy, and they'll start smashing your sausage rolls and then hopefully buy one of my soups.
That's the win-win, isn't it?
It's a difficult situation. Like I see it from a health benefit more of than an environment benefit. Like if you push the health benefit, I think people will listen more. As soon as you, it's like, I see it like with Christianity in it, you push Jesus on some people and they're like, oh no, I don't want to talk to you. And it's like with veganism. Oh, you're talking veganism. Don't talk to me. And it's like, right. Okay. It is a weird one though, like with the whole milk industry at the moment, like you're not allowed to call oat milk milk or soy milk milk. They've changed the whole packaging from oat milk. So we used to get it in and it's gone from oat milk now to oat drink. because the milk industry are feeling, they're feeling a hit. They're taking a hit because a lot more people are drinking oat milk or soya or almond or coconut. And I think it's going more vegan nowadays, and I think a lot more people are doing it just for a health benefit of things. So
I completely agree with you on the health benefit. I think the thing for me though is, no matter how, look at the obesity epidemic that we're faced with, and that's it's not like there's been millions and millions and millions of pounds been spent telling people, you're not getting your five a day. If you don't get your five a day, you don't get all the vitamins and minerals, you don't get your fiber levels, you're at greater risk of cancer, blah, 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 blah. But it still doesn't make an impact, does it? Still people eat crap constantly, which is why we've got a massive problem. So as much as I am like, you're preaching to convert with me, the health side of eating, you are what you eat, all of that stuff, it doesn't seem to get people in the same place. If however we can kind of do a double whammy where people are like, my goodness, it tastes like something that's full of meat, fish and dairy, and it's good for me, and it's good for the planet, and there's no animals, like it's just like kind of, and that's the opportunity for us in the food and drink industry over the next few decades to go, okay, can we create those products that deliver on all of those need states for what people want? And I think we've made good progress over the last few years, but fast forward another 5 years, about the amount of plant-based options out there. I mean, Oatly's a great example, incredible brand and completely ridiculous. They're not allowed to call their milk milk, but you know, let's leave that for another podcast to debate.
Honestly, it's mad. It's mad. it's just awesome to talk to you about business, and just like, because obviously me and Alex are businesses and stuff like that, and we're moving on to our next, I'd say next process of our business. Like I own a small cafe, but I'm in talks to doing other stuff, and I know Alex has got stuff with his, so it's just nice to hear how you've done it and the passion that you've got for it. Like I've got passion for coffee, that's my passion. You know, and I just want to kind of share it and do it with other people. That's my thing. So
have you tried our power shakes?
I haven't. This is another thing I was going to say to you. Like I, because obviously I have coffee on tap.
Yeah,
I don't tend to go to other, well, I do go to other places, but I try to just, I just get it for free. So I'm like,
Go on, sorry, Paul.
No, we've launched a range of power shakes recently, and we got one recipe, which has got Colombian coffee in it. But I'll send you some samples up, and you can you can taste it, tear it apart, and tell us if we should be putting different coffee in it. I'm all ears to hear any a Jedi in any industry. I'm like, tell me what you know, and we'll make our stuff better.
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely,
sounds good.
Definitely have a little taste for you, and you know,
cool.
Yeah.
I haven't tried it yet, Paul. I was going to say, be perfectly honest with you, on the shakes front, we've interviewed one of the co-founders of Huel.
Yeah,
on the podcast before. So I've kind of been getting into the Huel sort of stuff as well. But it ties in with your products as well, because it's the same as, like, you know, nutritionally complete, convenient meal, isn't it? So
yeah, I mean, Huel... Yeah, those guys have crushed it, and massive respect. I mean, what they've tapped into in terms of, obviously, the majority of their business is the powders, isn't it? The meal powders, and fair play to what they've done over the last few years, grown. I think it's one of the fastest, if not the fastest, food and drink brand over the last few years. And I guess their ready to drink range has similar claims to what our power shakes do, but we make ours differently to them. So we use real food have a much shorter shelf life. It's in glass bottles. It's a quite a different proposition. Yeah. But horses for courses. What I'd swap the numbers they've got for the numbers I've got. So, I think. That whole shake market that we're both in is at the very much the early stages. So there's plenty enough room for them, us, and no doubt many more over the next few years. But yeah, big respect for what they've done.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well, when we have another chat, maybe a couple of years down the line, Paul, I'm sure you'll be doing them type of numbers yourself.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. Like I say, it's been excellent to talk to you, mate. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. So we've just got a few questions we'll finish on, Paul, and then we'll let you get on with your evening.
Okay.
If you can share us a fact about you that most people won't know, if you can.
Facts about me that most people won't know. Okay, a fact. I don't know why I'm going to say this. It's just come to me. I think that's because I've said sport's my number one passion. Food. The most incredible few months I ever had was I was working on a game reserve in South Africa, Swalu Desert Game Reserve, south of Kimberley. And I did that when I left school for a few months. And it was the most incredible few months of my life. And I don't know how my life is going to play out over the next few years, but living on the African bush, on that sacred land with wild animals, in terms of the weight of all of the animals on the planet, it's like 60% is livestock, 36% is humans, and it's 4% and reducing are wild animals. So my kids play with like lions and elephants as if they're everywhere, and they're hardly anywhere. They really should just be playing with cows and chickens. But a fact for me is that it was an incredible experience, and I will be somehow, shape or form spending more of my time helping to preserve wild animals around the planet, because I don't want them to end up the way of the dinosaurs.
Mm. Yeah. Whoa, that's a...
Yeah,
I think that's probably the best fact we've ever heard from from someone. I'm not trying to blow smoke up your ass or out, but yeah, normally people just say like, "I used to play flute when I was younger."
I don't know.
That
was
a good one. That was straight from the heart, wasn't it?
I made it up, but it was true. If that makes sense to people.
Yeah, it's good. If you could invite anyone, dead or alive, into this chat, who would it be and why?
easy that. The reason I say it's easy is my dad. He left this planet when I was 15. So if I could invite anyone back, it'd be him. And he was the most inspirational person in my life. And I had 15 years with him. So if I could have another minute with him, that'd be gold dust. But apart from my dad, it'd be Nelson Mandela. Again, I think following the African theme, the guy
has
walked to freedom. You began the podcast asking about my mindset. What my mindset, because I've hurt a few bones in my arm. Like, the guy was in prison for years and years and years wrongfully, and still came out with nothing but love for the people that had put him. Like, the guy's just off the charts.
Yeah.
Inspirational. Yeah. And I think when anyone thinks they're having a bit of a crap time of it, I think they should just maybe have a look at what that man was put through and how he still came out of it and inspired a whole nation. And since, unfortunately, his departing, South Africa is headed in the wrong direction, but it shows the power of a man to unite a nation.
Yeah.
What an incredible human being that man was.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. He's just like one of those, like, just fountains of wisdom sort of thing, isn't it? It's just like, wow. One of my favourite quotes from him is actually he said, I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. That one sticks with me.
Yeah.
I just thought, that hits home, that one.
The guy's brilliant.
The first guy we on the first episode we did with a guy called Oscar Chlopsky, he was a South African Olympic captain. He got to meet Nelson Mandela. If you get a chance to listen to that one, he's a very, very interesting guy. He's got an incurable cancer and was told he had like 6 months to live, and he's been going for nearly a year and a half now. Brilliant guy.
Good on him.
Absolutely.
No, definitely take a listen.
Last one, Paul. So just to finish on a high note, for anyone that's listening who's, right at the start of the journey and looking at, like, taking control of their own future, what would be kind of the final piece of advice you'd have for someone that's just getting started?
Final bit of advice. JFDI, just fucking do it. I think people have got to bet on their own success. Definitely, you've got to take a level of controlled risk. But if you're 70% sure, then go for it. Prioritize getting incredible people around you. Recruit attitude over experience and intellect. Assess people on their energy, their smarts, their integrity. I think there's a I kind of see the challenge and pain as useful instructors, help you develop and be the best version of yourself. But if you've got something burning inside you and you really want to start your own business, find the yeses in the noes. Don't let anyone put a wall up in front of you. Like, just, we get one life. As my nana used to say, even a long one's not, even a long life on this planet is a short one. So if you want to bloody do something, then just fucking do it. And what's the worst that can happen? You lose it. You leave your job. You try and start your own business. It doesn't go wrong. It doesn't go right. You find a job elsewhere, or you try and start another business, and you just go for it. And that's why I say you can't be completely maverick with it. It's got to be a level of controlled risk, but I think when you know, and I think so many people have got that scratch to do their own thing. I don't know how many people regret going for it. I do know a lot of people regret not going for it.
Yeah. Amazing. That's a fantastic way to finish there, mate. And just like to say from our point of view, just, I'm sure, pretty confident you're going to go on to, keep doing amazing things in your journey, Paul. So thanks for joining us, mate. And it's been a pleasure, and the best of luck with everything going forward.
Yes.
Nice one, lads. Thanks so much for taking an interest in our story, and hopefully we'll cross paths in real life when we're fully released from captivity.
Yeah, that'll be good.
we'll have a coffee or a power shake.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Nice one. Cheers, lads.
Excellent. All right, take care, Paul. Thanks, mate.
See you later.
Cheers,
boys. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another inspiring self-made story, and we hope you enjoyed the show. We would be very grateful if you could kindly leave us a review, as it will help us impact a wider audience. You can do this on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. If you want to reach out on the socials, find us across all platforms using @The Self-Made Minds Podcast. See you next time, and happy success making.